WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
President Joe Biden is credited with pushing through the most sweeping climate legislation in U.S. history. He's also heavily invested in environmental justice.
We set a historic goal to direct 40%, direct 40% of the overall benefits of all federal investment in climate change to clean air, clean water, clean transit, and more to communities that are disproportionately impacted by environmental degradation.
After he appointed the country's first chief environmental justice officer, Jelan White Newsom. She joined us on the show along with Reset sustainability contributor Karen Weigert. I asked Jelan, as the first ever person to hold this title, what has it meant to her to have this opportunity?
It has been really a dream come true. I mean, I have been working on environmental justice since high school, and to be able to try and make some change at the federal level is just been a dream come true. So it's been an amazing and an honor and a privilege. And I think being a part of the Biden-Harris administration that has made environmental justice a priority like none other just speaks volumes. So it's been great.
So you're at the end of this, you know, this 4-year mark. How are you reflecting on the end of your time at the White House?
Yeah, I tell you, it's bittersweet. I mean, you know, if we had had some more time, there were so many other things that we wanted to do. But what I will say, what we've been able to accomplish, and I appreciate what you shared up front, hearing the president talk about the Justice 40 initiative. I mean, our goal was to make sure that the benefits of these historic investments reach communities that have been overburdened by pollution and underinvested in and really forgotten. And so the fact that we have been able to exceed that goal, actually getting 71% of those communities to be able to benefit from these resources is amazing. And that was the president's vision. And we were able to meet that goal with the help of our federal agency partners and, of course, the voice of community. So I'm excited about what's to come.
Yeah. I mean, what do you think is ahead then for this country, especially when it comes to our environmental needs?
Yes. I mean, here's the thing. This administration has set a solid foundation. Again, we have things in place like a definition of what environmental justice is, the first federal government-wide definition of environmental justice that can be used at many levels. We have tools that are out there, like the Climate and Economic Justice Screening Tool, or the CEJIS, that is a map that shows the burdens that different communities are facing. We have tools for accountability in terms of the Environmental Justice Scorecard. Again, the first thing to actually track how this country has been advancing environmental justice. So what I'm excited about is that environmental justice did not start with the federal government, and it won't end with the federal government. We have communities, we have state and local governments that are going to take these tools and resources and the momentum from this administration to keep the work going. So that's what gives me hope, Sasha.
Yeah. Karen, let's bring you in here. What is top of mind when you hear what Jelan has to say here, her reflections?
It is remarkable that we can have a conversation reflecting about environmental justice at the federal government and at this level. And I think that's one of the really important parts of this discussion, is just that it was elevated and currently is elevated. But as Jelan was saying, environmental justice really grew up in communities, and Chicago really being one of those anchor communities. But this moment here has seen what is possible to set in stone and to set in place at the federal level. So now we're talking about 16 agencies across the federal government are participating in this effort on Justice 40. We have, as Jelan was saying, definitions, et cetera, but we really have what is the beginnings of a whole government approach to environmental justice. So from, you know, from neighborhoods in Chicago to the nation, the question is really what happens next.
Jelan, what do you point to as some of your major successes? Tell us more.
You know, I mean, you know, folks will definitely say that this administration, you know, put out the most funding ever for environmental justice. So you think about the billions of dollars that, you know, were focused on the Justice 40 initiative, our federal agency partners that got those monies out in terms of, you know, giving communities an opportunity to work on climate change mitigation, to tree planting. I mean, mitigation plan, a lot of different things. But what I think is most important is really the relationships and the networks that were formed. You know, we had an opportunity to make the space for really the White House to be the people's house, which is what it should be. Mm-hmm. So a lot of our work was, again, bringing folks into the fold that had been left out, that had not been connected, and really had first-time opportunities to not only get resources, but to also be seen and heard. And so one of the things that, you know, I'm really proud of is the fact that we had, for the first time ever, a White House Environmental Justice Advisory Council, better known as the WEJAC, that again included 32 of some of your prominent environmental justice leaders across this country. And really our whole agenda and the president's agenda was guided by their recommendations. So this was really the first time that we had formal recommendations from community leaders that said, hey, this is what you need to do to really advance environmental justice. And I feel like that foundation of making sure that community voice was a part of and guided our work was something, you know, that had never been done and what I'm extremely proud of. And I think just the measures and the efforts that we took, again, not perfect, but to make sure that we heard from communities and being invited into communities to really see, hear and listen about what's happening, but also take it back to the White House and say, okay, so what can we do differently and mm-hmm. connect with our federal agencies? So to me, that those partnerships, those networks and those relationships are not going to end with the end of this administration. They're going to keep on going. And that is what's going to make this movement continue.
You know, as you speak of that, I remember that earlier, Jalan, you said there are so many other things we wanted to accomplish in these 4 years. Give us a short list.
Oh, boy, I'll try and give you a short list. I mean, here's the thing. I had an awesome environmental justice office. And if we had more time, when I talk about the Justice 40 initiative, I mean, a lot of the things that we wanted to dig into more was really digging into those projects that got funded and seeing, again, over time, how they will manifest in making environments healthier and safer for people. So again, just because you put money, you know, into a community doesn't mean that it's actually going to be positive or make a difference. So we wanted to really track that. So that's something that would only come over time. I think because we had, for example, several different public meetings, you know, a couple of the issues that were raised by constituents continuously mm-hmm. Was, again, the notion of relocation, and particularly for legacy environmental justice communities, meaning those communities that have been polluted on for decades and really don't have the resources to move or relocate to another place. And, you know, really thinking about what could be a federal government response or support to that. And so I think there's just some issues that are tough that, again, not that it has to stop with, you know, this end of this administration, but yes, the things that we would have loved to dig into a little bit more.
So you mentioned already, you know, the climate and economic justice screening tool that your office developed, right? And this was, of course, to help government agencies identify underserved communities that that are overburdened by climate risk and environmental injustice. And it looked at ways that they could benefit from government investment. I'm curious, do you anticipate that this kind of tool is going to continue to be used by the Trump administration?
So the beautiful thing about it is that we have these tools and resources. And in my last kind of farewell statement to the multiple listservs that we have was that, hey, folks, you on the outside, download these tools, download the data from the CJIS, the Climate and Economic Justice Screening Tool. It's publicly available. Use it in your advocacy. Use it at the state and local government level. So the cool part about it, these tools will live on, and people, and we know entities and external organizations are already putting them to good use.
Karen, when you zoom out, what do you think has been the biggest national impact of that screening tool?
When I think about a screening tool like that, I think a lot of what Jalan just mentioned actually is incredibly powerful and longstanding is the idea that you can take something that people sometimes feel is very unique and very local, which is this question of environmental justice. You can elevate it and you can have a data-driven backdrop that allows you from a more objective standpoint to say, yes, this is a community that has been historically overburdened and underserved. And that is a tool that you can use across decisions across the nation. And so in a sense, it takes something that can often feel isolated and it allows people to be systematic. And that's a bridge that is incredibly difficult to build. And it's one that, because the data exists, can be used by lots of different entities. Mm-hmm. So in fact, it's a data screening tool. And you always hear, if you can't measure it, you can't manage it. This allows for that kind of a conversation in the area of economic justice and environmental justice.
We'll talk about how that measurement has made an impact here in the Midwest.
It's allowed the federal government, particularly the EPA, with some of the grant dollars that they've been bringing forward, and as we link back to some of the funding coming through the IRA, to prioritize. And so when the Biden-Harris administration talked about Justice 40 and that goal of a minimum of 40% of the overall benefits from expenditures going to underserved communities, they can actually track it, and there are maps, and you can actually see where the dollars have gone. So when Jelan is mentioning a 71% number, this kind of a tool allows dollars to flow to places across Chicago. And we've particularly in Illinois, we've been able to receive some dollars, and then particularly within Midwestern communities. But we're not the only part of the country, and that's actually incredibly important when you talk about trying to scale solutions in the space.
Sticking with you here, Karen, on a related note, in Chicago, I mean, we're exposed to pollution in countless ways, right? The exposure can add up over time, and we know that it can affect our health. And we are not all exposed to the same amount of pollution, depending on where we live. And Chicago engaged in a cumulative impact assessment in 2023, trying to see much closer who these environmental burdens are impacting the most. Tell us more about what the assessment showed.
This idea of understanding the data and using that as a way to prioritize is something that Chicago has taken on wholeheartedly at the city level. And as you mentioned, they really did the first cumulative impact assessment for the city and have mapped out layers of data. And you can look at all 77 community areas and see which are categorized as environmental justice communities. So who has disproportionately been exposed to air, water, land pollution, and other stressors? So that allows the city then to have a perspective on where, therefore, might potential investments come and where might priorities be. And so this community, the cumulative impact assessment, not only was it addressed and identified, there's starting to be initial reporting and being able to look at, did investments in fact happen in these communities? And when the city is deploying many resources across departments, what can we see? Mm-hmm. So they've begun to put out preliminary information on, you know, different departments and some of the work, and identify and link it back to these environmental justice priorities, which came similar to what Jelan was describing, from community engagement. This is really about collaboratively understanding both the data of what's needed, but also the personal impact side, and then collectively prioritizing. So what do you go do?
So we are already seeing evidence of how those findings are guiding the city's environmental justice policy?
You're seeing the ability to look at some specific areas where dollars have been spent and where themes have continued. I'll give you a couple of examples. So one of the programs that has existed for many, many years is an incredible jobs training program called Green Corps that works with individuals with barriers to employment and then brings them into careers and fields that relate to local plants, landscaping, et cetera. That is an example of a program that has existed for years. There has been some growth, and that's prioritized in here, and that's out of the Department of Transportation. You can then look at environmental sampling in fleet facilities, like where are you actually getting data? And you can count the percentage of that money that's actually happening now in these environmental justice communities. So you are able to see little bit of this information starting to come forward.
Interesting. Well, Jelan, President-elect Donald Trump's pick to lead the EPA, I'm talking about Lee Zeldin, he formerly served in Congress, and there he opposed efforts to limit the forever chemicals that some companies have contaminated our waterways with. And Zeldin supported weakening EPA standards for particulate matter pollution. He's also pledged to roll back environmental regulations if he's confirmed. Let's listen.
So day one and the first 100 days, we have the opportunity to roll back regulations that are forcing businesses to be able to struggle.
What do you think when you hear that? What's the kind of impact that could have on people's health?
So, of course, when we think about the importance of environmental regulations, it's about, again, protecting people health. And that's the minimal, right? What's important, and at this moment right now, is that just because there will be a shift in the administration, there will be a shift in some of the values that might be held by some of the incoming leaders, does not mean that corporations, that philanthropy, that state and local governments need to, I would say, backslide. So this is the time now for us to stay committed, for us to move forward. And yes, while there might be some changes and shifts happening in the upcoming administration, I feel like we know what to do. We know what is right. Mm-hmm. And we don't have an excuse not to stay committed.
Yeah. You talked a bit earlier about some of the things that you know for sure will be staying. Of course, creating that definition, the tool, the screening tool. I mean, anything else that you can think of that's been embedded in the federal government now that will continue and will serve those communities that we talked about?
Yeah, Sasha. I think, with having the honor to lead the first Office of Environmental Justice, there were three things that I told my team we were going to focus on: reducing burdens and harm, making sure investments get to communities that need it the most, and then institutionalizing environmental justice. That last one about institutionalization is critical. Remain hopeful about is that as a political appointee, yes, my time is limited. I'm done. But we have civil servants within our federal agencies that are going to continue the work. And they are folks that have been committed. They are folks that have lasted across multiple administrations. And I have confidence that the strategic plans that have been developed by our agencies, the thinking, the asking of questions, the conversations that we've been able to orchestrate over the next 4 years, and make the connections to real community folks, it will stand the test of time. So again, I am very hopeful. And I think when we have opportunities like this, because I think this is an opportunity, I am not scared. It's actually an opportunity for us to come together even stronger mm-hmm. on the outside and then make sure that the work will continue, maybe not in the limelight as it has been with this administration, but the work will continue within our federal agencies. So I'm excited.
When you're looking ahead and you think about these individuals who can help lead in the federal government, you've also mentioned some other sectors, philanthropy, potentially even state and local government. Where do you see the strength coming outside of the federal government as you look at these issues in the next few years?
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. I spent the first half of my career in private industry. So I actually was environmental health safety manager, public health engineer with corporations where really it was about look at our bottom line. And I remember having many conversations with my plant managers trying to convince them that, actually, if we, really take a look at our potential impacts on the community, on our environment, that there's things that we can do to mitigate that. So in the end, we won't be paying more to dispose of waste or deal with, community complaints. So I really feel like the sources of contamination and pollution in those industries that are, the primary folks, they have the opportunity to step up. So whether it is, beefing up your sustainability goals, making sure that environmental justice is a part or something that you're measuring. And we have examples of that with some companies, whether it's waste management or Apple, they need to continue to step up. I think with philanthropy, again, having spent several years as an environmental grant maker for a national foundation, this is not the time for philanthropy to back down. I mean, philanthropy has certainly helped fill in the gaps from what federal government has and has not been able to do in terms of supporting that capacity, the technical assistance and things needed for community-based organizations. Again, this is not the time to stop. So philanthropy needs to continue doing that. Where defense is necessary to make sure that folks are able to continue their work unobstructed by, a possible negative administration coming in, they need to do that. So I think private industry, philanthropy will definitely be critical to making sure that this work continues.
So in the interest of time here, I want to hear from you both real quick. What are you going to keep your eye on next week once President-elect Trump is sworn in? You first, Jalan.
You know, I am going to keep my eye on the prize. And the prize is that I have an opportunity to be outside of federal government. I have an opportunity to use what I've learned over these last couple of years to make sure that our groups, our organizations, our community-based organizations, private industry, philanthropy, continue working towards this. So I'll be paying attention, but I'm really focused on the future and making sure folks are ready to rock. And we have a lot of work to do. And again, the movement started with the people. It will continue with the people. And hopefully in the next 4 years, we'll have an opportunity and we'll be more ready and organized to jump back in.
Karen?
Yeah, absolutely. I think certainly just looking at the incoming administration, there will be a lot to follow. I expect a lot of news, a lot of announcements on day one, quite honestly, related to climate and the environment and environmental justice. So we'll have to continue to watch that topic by topic, particularly around the EPA and the creation of the Energy Council. And then, we'll continue to look for what's driving change in these spaces and how is that going to continue to affect Chicago and Chicagoland. There's a long history from Hazel Johnson forward of leadership on environmental justice, and I expect to see more of that coming out of Chicago.
We've been talking with outgoing Federal Chief Environmental Justice Officer Jalan White Newsom and Reset Sustainability Contributor Karen Weigert. Thank you both.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Linnea Dominic and edited by Meha Ahmed. It was mixed by Ari Mejia. Reset makes sure to bring you conversations to keep you informed on the most important issues of the day. To never miss an episode, hit subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts or find us at wbez.org/reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. We'll meet again later today.
I love how WBEZ shows different sides of the story. I never feel like it's too polarized, and I think the reporters do an excellent job of trying to get the full story, trying to show different other sides. I'm often, when I'm listening to public radio, think in my mind, well, what about X? Or like, I have another question. Or like, have they thought about X? And most of the time, WBEZ thinks about all of it, which I really appreciate.